Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Good afternoon and good evening, and welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, TEDx Speaker, Business Positioning Strategist, and author, Sean Douglas. This show is currently heard in over 70 countries, such as the United States, United Kingdom, all across Africa, Europe, and they're listening in Malaysia, New Zealand, and Australia. So I want to thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformation. Here is where we tell the stories of why we're doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use this to then transform others and elevate their lives as well. You can listen to us live right here on Blog Talk Radio Tuesday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Join us as we go live. Join our Facebook community, Life Transformation Radio Community, and never miss an episode by subscribing wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts. This show is available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Overcast, CastBox, the Himalaya app, the Google Play Music app. Basically, wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts, we are there. So I ask that you subscribe to Life Transformation Radio. On the show, I bring on entrepreneurs, speakers, business owners, coaches, other podcasters, authors, basically amazing people who are impacting the world around them. And my guest today does exactly that. If you have any questions for any of the guests that I bring on the show during our live broadcast Tuesday through Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time, you can call us up at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. And with that, please help me welcome to the show my friend, Chris Poirier. Corey. What's happening, my brother? My dude is sitting right across from me. I keep looking at his face. He's laughing over here. I'm like, I did that three times a day.
That's all good, man. I'm doing fantastic. How are you doing?
Dude, I'm so exhausted. I'm working super, super hard, man. Working on some new programs with my dude over here. And, man, it's just been since May, beginning, middle of May until, like, today, man. It has been lighting the candle at both ends and just going super hard, trying to get new programs and stuff ready for the later half of 2019. And I'm just exhausted. Be honest with you, I'm just exhausted.
Yeah, you know what? I was saying to you earlier, I totally, totally get it. I've been there many times, my friend. So I'm totally on board with you and also sympathize.
Yeah, man. You know, the one thing about entrepreneurship that's never going to get old is the merit that it takes, right? And the results that comes is based on your work, on your body of work, you know? So if you're not getting results, you're probably not working as hard, but sometimes we can overwork and then we're just not productive anymore, which is, I think, the boundary that I'm starting to cross now is I'm trying to do too much. So me and my dude over here are going to scale back and see, you know, where we can streamline some processes, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, when you mentioned that about, you know, sometimes you have to, I could even say it that way. Sometimes maybe you have to step back to step forward. I think, yep. Actually, it's funny. It was a theme of our mastermind group today. I have a mastermind that I run weekly, and it was the theme today. One of the, it was supposed to be a hot seat, but one of the people in my mastermind, she said, you know, I'm not really necessarily looking for items for my hot seat or answers or thoughts or suggestions. Just would love to have a conversation about it because maybe we can all grow from it. But she said that's where she's at right now. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you, right?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, she actually, and, you know, this is a big, bold step, but she was invited to speak somewhere, and she spoke there the last 2 years, and both years they promised her the next time they were going to put her up in a nice hotel, they're going to fly her in and do all the stuff, and each time they changed that, like, a week before or 2 weeks before, which is already announced. So this time she just went out to them and said, you know what, I apologize. I know you have other people on the card and somebody can fill in, but, you know, this is what you promised me. And now I just found out that this isn't the case. But she said that in the mastermind, she said basically her whole life right now is about taking the power back and stepping back. And, you know, I said to her, it's probably going to be your transformational moment that you remember forever, because she's finally taken the power and taken a step back so she can jump forward.
Oh, I love it, man. Yeah, absolutely. And at certain times you have to do that. So I cannot wait to dive into what we're going to talk about. You've done some magnificent things in your career, and that's what I'm currently working on. So the title of this episode is For the Love of Speaking with TEDx speaker Corey Poirier. Corey is a multi-time TEDx, Mo Mondays, and PMX speaker. He is also the host of the top-rated Conversations with Passion radio show, founder of the speaking program, and he has been featured in multiple television specials. A columnist with Entrepreneur and Forbes, he's been featured on or in CBS, CTV, NBC, ABC, and is one of the few leaders featured twice on the popular Entrepreneur on Fire show. He has also interviewed over 5,000 of the world's top leaders. If you want to know more about what he's up to, go to thespeakingprogram.com, thespeakingprogram.com. You can also go to thetedxprogram.com. And then he has a link for a free book, thebookofpublicspeaking.com, thebookofpublicspeaking.com. And also iTunes links are in there for Let's Do Influencing Show and the speaking podcast For the Love of Speaking. You can subscribe to those, which I have already done. And so you go to iTunes or wherever you're comfortable listening to podcasts and subscribe to those shows. So, Corey, man, the first question I have to ask, which is the most important question I ask in my show, is what is your why? Why do you do what you do?
So this, it's interesting, this question for me in particular, I guess it's more timely right now, well, as timely right now as it's ever been, mainly because I'm working actually on getting my latest book to the market. And I say latest book, it was a self-published book. Now it's moved over to a publisher. So it's being re-released. But why I say it's perfectly timed is because it's actually called The Book of Why and How. And so I'm a big believer on us knowing our why. And so for me, what I share in the book is that my why, which is also, I'll call it my purpose statement, is so this is the purpose statement, which ties into the why, but I always want to be the guy who motivates, donates, inspires, educates, and entertains. And so what does that mean to me in terms of what is my why? Well, my why is creating a ripple for other people to do good. And so, you know, when I say that can be creating the ripple from the stage. You know, you mentioned about speaking. It could be creating a ripple with my written word. But what I really want to do is I want to help other people realize how to become the best version of themselves, and also realize that it's a little easier than we've been led to believe. And so, you know, having done as many interviews as I have, I share with people what the top 1%ers, what are their common secrets and traits and habits. And I find that allows people, if they really act on that, to join the 1% a lot quicker. And so that's what I love to do, help people become the better version of themselves, which can mean joining the 1% or can just mean being better today than they were yesterday.
I love it. I think that's the reason why you would want to do something is I believe that you should always find things and then leave them better than what you found them. Anytime that happens, whether you are staying over at someone's house or you borrow their car or you find a person who really wants to build a speaker business, but they're not sure how. And so they're searching and you're searching. And then all of a sudden, after the one or however many months of coaching, boom, they've, you know, got all the tools. You've given it to them. You walk away happy. They walk away happy. Like, I always like to find things and then make them better than what I found them, or in the, or, you know, make it a better state than what I found them in, you know? And I just believe that with all my heart. So I love your why. I love why you do what you do. Talk about the transformational moment that triggered that. I don't believe that life is just a bunch of sunshine and rainbows and we're just destined for greatness, you know, in every single thing that we do. We always have our zone of genius, as they call it. What was a transformational moment that put you on the path to what you're doing today?
So, you know, Sean, this isn't, I'd love to, I mean, I, you know, like all of us, we love to have a sexy story around something to share or a sexy moment.
Yeah.
What I'm going to share with you isn't as sexy as, you know, other moments of mine that were maybe transformational, but not as transformational, but I still think it's authentic, which is, you know, to me just as or more important. And so for me, that moment was I started with a Fortune 500 company back in 1996. I started with Toshiba. A lot of people will be familiar with Toshiba,
wow.
Really big brand. And I actually, it was interesting. I moved across the country. I planned to work on the oil rigs, and I ended up getting burned with hydrochloric acid in my first
what?
5-6 days. Yeah. They sent me in a pump truck with acid, and one guy didn't tell the other guy, whenever he was just starting his sort of 7-day swing shift, that there was acid in there. So the new guy sent us in there and we hacked away at the cement and there was acid underneath. And so it burned a little bit of my face. It all cleared up, but I quickly moved into the city. Like,
yeah.
I left the job and said, that's not for me. And it's weird. I was looking for a position and the smallest ad in the newspaper was at the time Toshiba, which was the 58th largest company in the world. So smallest ad, one of the largest companies in the world. And I went and applied for that job. And to make a long story really short is basically I was competing with 177 other people for one job, one position. And I ended up landing the job after 2 interviews. Both interviews I bombed, I would say, horribly, because I actually was supposed to wear a suit for this type of a job in sales. And I showed up wearing green sneakers and green dress pants. And I tried to pass it off that the sneakers were also dress shoes. So I figured they wouldn't notice. And then the manager who interviewed me first said, you know, I like you. I want to bring you back. Make sure you wear a suit. I said, sounds good. And then I didn't have the money to spend, nor did I want to spend the money until I knew if I was going to get the job.
Right.
So I actually came back again the next interview, and I was wearing purple dress pants and this time purple dress shoes. And the only reason I wore purple is because it was the only shoes I could find that fit. And so, so I went in for the second interview, and the guy ended up saying, well, you know, I know you were supposed to wear a suit, but I, you know, I respect you that you didn't, because he said, when I came for the job here, I was wearing ripped jeans. And he ended up becoming the sales manager. So basically,
wow.
Where this ties into in terms of how this was massive for me is basically, and how it was a transformational moment, is they hired me. He gave me 25 business cards that were blank and I had to write my name on them. And he said, we're not going to bother printing cards until we know if you can sell. And that was my, you know, sale. So they weren't investing in me at all until. So what happened was the only thing, my sale, or I'll say it this way, my training, you know, you think Fortune 500 company, you figure, well, the onboard training is going to be like a week of high level training where they bring in people and all this stuff. And nowhere close. What they did was they handed me a Zig Ziglar VHS. So VHS, video cassette. Zig Ziglar, I think it was at the top, I think was the one, but I might be wrong. Basically, it was 2 hours long, and I watched that video. And he pulled me in, just his approach, Ziglar's style of speaking, and he never let me go. And so I kept watching it. I rewatched it about 10 times. And here's where the transformational moment happened, is that after that was done and I did survive, and you know, I ended up staying there for 5 years, left after going through various promotions. And I always look back at that moment and said, you know, how terrible is that? This large company, you know, global company, Fortune 500 company, and that was my training. And I remember what it felt like to be that person. And so I wanted to make sure that whether they could afford it or not, meaning if you think about public events and that, in some way, shape, or form, I was able to help equip people, and it could just be from an article I write, it could be from anything, but I wanted to make sure that nobody had to go through what I had to go through, which is to have no access to any resources to help them start a new career or get to a place they're trying to get to. And so that, Sean, the non-sexy but still important moment in my life was the realization to help other people not go through what I went through.
That's it's so funny that they give you this Zig Ziglar tape and go, here, watch this. You know, it's not even like a company training video. You know, like I remember when I was 16, I worked at McDonald's, you know, 15 or whatever. And they're like, here. And it was like, welcome to your career at McDonald's. And I'm like, BS career, you know. And then I went to work at Discount Tire and I became a warehouse manager. And I remember the training video was, welcome to your career at Discount Tire. And I'm like, maybe, you know, I mean, I remember after basic training, being trained all through the military, everything, our annual training was a 4-hour video. That was our annual training, our fire bottle training, our, you know, our, they call it re-blue because the Air Force's color is blue. So it's like, you know, you're re-blued, you know, after block training because you learned, you know, how to, you know, how to reinstitute the core values into your life. Like all the trainings like video or like computer based training, you know, and now it's a lot different. But back in like 2001, they popped in a video and when they were like, you guys are good to go. And you're like, it's such a waste, you know. But I think it's funny that they put in a Zig Ziglar tape, right? Like not even a branded, they couldn't even spend the money on a branded video. They had to use somebody else's content to train you. I think that's pretty funny.
and I agree. And you know why? From what I heard and gathered, which is the one of the only, I won't call it a regret because I couldn't have changed it and it had nothing to do with me. But I found out that just months before I joined the company, they had all went to a Zig Ziglar conference that Zig came into town. And so I missed that conference. But what I think what happened, and I'm just guessing here, but I think they probably bought the VHS tape at the conference. And so that's like $30 they gave Ziglar and then, you know, used his training to teach other people for months and years.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
But that was,
and now
that
you
was
can just watch it on, yeah. Well, now you can just watch it on YouTube, you know, whatever you need. You know, you just watch it on YouTube now, which is kind of funny now because people call YouTube like the, you know, training university or you know, YouTube university or, you know, whatever. Like anything you want to know, you can watch right there on YouTube. There's going to be millions of videos, you know, available for you to watch. So how have you taken your transformational moment and elevated the world around you? You said you'd never let anybody go through that again. So what was your way? How did you elevate the world around you after that?
So I would love to say that it was a short path and it happened right away. But, you know, being, again, full disclosure, it wasn't a quick, let's say, switch for me. Two things happened. One, at that moment when it happened, I said, you know, I didn't say I want to make sure nobody goes through it again when it first happened because I didn't even know what I was going through. I was so naive and young that I was in it. But what it was years later, whenever I kind of, well, I mean, to make a weird path and I'm going to say swerve, I actually was tricked onto a stand-up comedy stage, which is how I got into speaking. And so when that happened and I started seeing that speaking could be an option for me, that was the day when I'm going to say that the seed was planted whenever I went through that Zig Ziglar training and didn't have, you know, any really quality training from that company. But the day that the seed kind of bloomed and blossomed was the day that I was performing stand-up comedy and saw another speaker and said, and asked myself, I wonder if he's getting paid to do this. And when I found that the answer was yes, that was whenever I said, you know what, whenever I said a few years earlier, I wanted to try to figure out a way to make sure nobody goes through what I went through when I started. Now I think I have the way. And so it was years later. It wasn't an immediate thing, but that moment that I mentioned earlier was big, not at the moment it happened, but within a few years, I was like, that training was horrible. And that's terrible. I went through that. And in some point, I want to make sure nobody else will have to go through that, but I don't know how I can do that. And so I had to actually go through my journey and path to get there. But once I figured out that speaking was the platform to first start doing that, then all the handcuffs were off. And then so from that point, the stage, of course, was one way that I started making sure nobody went through it. Whether it was at first, I started with public events where people could attend my event for, I mean, I think I started at like $35 an event, you know, like per person. And I did that because I wanted this guy or girl that worked at a company, and the company may not have even cared about their professional or personal development, but I did. And I knew if they were willing to invest even $35, that I was going to give them as high quality training as I could to go back into their world and bring that with them. And, you know, sometimes the companies, credit to them, would pay for 10 employees to go and stuff like that. So it made it affordable for a company too. So that was one way. Then I started teaching at a local college, a business course. What I taught actually was sales, but it was a business studies course, they called it. And it was just like on the weekends, evenings type thing. So it was for people after, you know, after they finished their own schooling, so continuing education. And then outside of that, Sean, it was started with writing for local magazines, writing for newspapers, doing media interviews. So all those ways I felt that these were, let's say, little portals that I could use to impact that person that wasn't getting training from the company. So in terms of how I did it and the methods and the platforms, it was everything that I could get my hands on. So magazines, I ended up writing books for that reason, self-published books. On the stage, it was just really all the ways you hear now of a thought leader getting their message out. I was trying to do every one of those. And this goes back to 2002. So I was kind of a little bit earlier in the game than a lot.
Yeah. I have a friend named Tom Singer. And he's been on the show before. I've been on his show. His show is called Cool Things Entrepreneurs Do. Really great guy. He has done over 60 stand-up comedy shows. And he says that, and he's been a speaker for 10 or 12 years. This is a recent thing. As of like a year or two ago, he's been doing this. And he said that he's become like double or triple the amount of speaker that he was. He's that times better because he has to come up with new material. He has to make it funny. So it's because he's become a better MC. He's become a better speaker. He engages more. He's like, I've been a great speaker for 10 years, but now I'm like, I'm just beginning to unlock this potential just by doing stand up. He has become more, he stepped into it more, I suppose you could say, right? He's more well-rounded. And what I thought was interesting is I knew this before that the comics, I mean, the real guys, even Joe Rogan, all these guys would go to these bars and just bomb on purpose, trying to come up with new material. They would just bomb. And so nobody cared because they're like, hey guys, I'm going to test out some new material. Kind of want to check some things out, you know, see how it goes. And if they did good, then it made it to the comedy special. If they bombed it, then, you know, they wouldn't use it, you know? So they tested material in like local bars and clubs and stuff with like 20 people. And then the comedy specials that you see on TV, those have been honed and they're streamlined and they're refined and they're ready to go. And so I thought about doing some stand-up comedy. I'm like, okay, maybe I want to get into it. I'm kind of like terrified, but my shtick is that I'm a live theater actor. So I played Brick, which in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof is played by Paul Newman. I played Wadsworth in Clue, which is played I can't remember that dude's name. But in the old Clue movie, I played Wadsworth, the butler. And it's just like I play these different roles. And it makes me a better speaker because I'm learning what blocking is. And when you learn how to block your speeches and you learn how to, you know, like I know speakers that their hand movements are so timed with their message that at 3 minutes and 38 seconds of their speech, they know exactly what they're doing with their right hand. You know, like every single thing is blocked. And so between the stand-up comedy and the acting and like there's a lot of tools out there for speakers that will make you that much better. Not just rehearsing, but there are different avenues that you can do that'll make you a more well-rounded speaker.
Yeah, when people ask me what was the best and most effective training I had as a speaker, I always, without exception, go back and say it was my days in those comedy clubs. And just mm-hmm. to, you know, just to put a big stamp on it too, Sean, you know, and it kind of, it's mind-boggling to me now. And I won't say they were all good. In fact, I would say more than 50% of the shows I performed at were not so great. But it actually, the number that we rounded out to, and I don't mean rounded up, I mean just, you know, what we came up with after we looked at, because I had all the, every time I did a show, I would tape it, but I would also track it and keep track of the shows, where they're at, write a little journal about it. So I ended up doing over 700 shows over the course of 9 years.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I mean, and some of those shows were eight for eight people. And some of them,
yeah.
You go to the club and it's like, I went to one that was, and on one of the last shows I ever performed at after a hiatus of a few years, I actually performed four times in the last maybe 6 years. Every time I did it, it was for a sort of a special occasion. But this one show I did was the show at a comedy club, or I'll correct that, at a local club that turned into a comedy club for one night. So it was like an open mic. And they did that once a week on Monday. And this buddy of mine says, dude, you got to check out the show. I know you're in town. Why don't you come out and do a set? And I wasn't really that sold. And I figured it was going to be like the normal open mic show where you have eight audience members or whatever, especially a Monday night. So I go there and now here's the catch. And he said, every week it's the same amount of people. And I didn't ask him how many because I just thought it was a small number. But then what he really sold me is he said the headliner this week is, what's his name? I just lost his name totally. Did you ever see what's it called Daddy's Home, that movie?
Oh, Daddy. Yeah. I've seen that. Yeah.
It's the guy that –
Mark Wahlberg, John Cena. Yeah,
no, it was the
Mark Wahlberg.
No, he's the handyman. He's a stand-up comic. Why is it – It's bugging me now.
Yep. I know what you're talking about. It's –
He has a bunch of HBO specials and Netflix specials and – it's totally, I'll get it here in a second. What's his name? Oh, it's going to bug me. So as I'm thinking about
his
name.
It's not the old man, you're talking about the old man?
No, it's the guy that Hannibal Buress. There we go. He's the guy that was like.
Oh, the black dude.
Yeah, he was the handyman that Will Ferrell ended up having moving in with him, basically.
Yeah.
He was eating the ice cream and stuff. Hannibal was performing this night at this comedy club that I'm talking about. And this was literally just before, I think it might have been, it was right around the time of the Bill Cosby thing. Because a lot of people don't know that it was him that went on stage and sort of out of Bill Cosby. And so he was blown up pretty huge at the time. But this comedy club, it didn't change how many people showed up. So I go to the show and I expect 8 or 10 people. Then I find out Hannibal's headlining. So then I was in for sure. And I get there and there was like 300 plus people on a Monday night at this club. And, so when I said perform for all different numbers, you know, that's an example where that club, normally a Monday night open mic show should be less than 20 people. And so I never knew what I was getting into. And that show, I have it, my part of it taped. It was a great set, great show. And then the only other things I did recently or in the last number of years was I had a chance to perform at Second City, which is like the almighty holy grail for a comic. And then Second City is the best reference point is it's great comics like Tina Fey, Dan Aykroyd, for those that haven't heard of Second City. I think Jim Carrey went through there, Chevy Chase did, Steve Martin. And so they have a chance to perform on their stage was massive. And then the improv, I had a chance to perform at the improv in California. And then,
That's awesome.
Yeah, so those are the only events that I've done in the last number of years out of those number of shows. So I did like 700 shows over 9 years, no shows for 3 years, those shows I just mentioned over a course of a year and a half, and then no shows again for 2 years. So that's been my comedy career. So it's been an interesting journey.
That's awesome.
But to that point,
oh, wow, that's awesome.
More in the stand-up comedy club, going back to my original point about that, than anything else I've done as a speaker, because to your point, you learn about everything. You learn about timing. You learn about working new material. I'll tell you the biggest thing I have a lot of people that say, you know, I'm not humorous, or I struggle with humor when I'm speaking. And I tell them, go to a comedy club. I wasn't funny. I had a sense of humor, and I had a good sense of humor, and I could be funny in my buddy's house with 10 people listening to me. But I wasn't right. stage funny. I had to write stage funny, and it took a long time to flush that material out. And so I learned a lot about material that didn't work and how to get it to work. And so taping yourself and then judging yourself and then getting feedback from mm-hmm. other people and actually adjusting with that feedback, like all those things you learned mm-hmm. in stand-up, there's almost no other place I've discovered that you can learn that. Outside of maybe improv or acting in stage plays, it's hard to learn that stuff elsewhere.
Yeah. No, I've gotten some things written, and I use comedy in my speaking. I know the stories that go along with my content, just because I've been speaking, you know, for the past, 3 years. I know what works, you know, but I haven't done a comedy show. And, so this year I've committed, I'm like, okay, I'm going to start doing the shows. And so every place that I go and speak at, I look for, open mics basically. And I almost did one in Orlando when I was speaking at PodFest. I almost did one, and I was there, but there was such a long line to do it. My name just never came up. And you had like literally a 3 to 5 minute set. Like that was it, 3 to 5 minutes. But I'd gotten there, you know, like 2 hours before they were done. And it was so many people signed up that I was waiting. I'm like, come on, get to me. But you know, they never, I mean, I was there, I showed up, but it just didn't happen. Well, so, you know.
Well, think about that. I mean, Sean, what a unique beast that is whenever you have a line of people duking it out to get 3 to 5 minutes. They drove there. If they drove there, they drove there on their own gas. They give up their own time. They may have prepared that material, which, and by the way, 3 to 5 minutes, even just getting 3 to 5 minutes is brand new. They probably spent 5 to 10 hours that week getting that material ready to get on the stage and get paid nothing. And like I said, they duped it out and they prepared for those 10 hours, not knowing for sure they're going to get a spot. I mean, where else would you see that happening? But that's happening on comedy clubs. Well, every night of the year, somewhere in the world. And it's just, it's totally its own sort of beast, if you will. But at the same time, there's, you know, it's its own little culture. And like I said, for me, some days I miss it because of all the things it gave me and all the things I learned from it. But at the same time, I can get a lot of those things from speaking. And the difference is, as a speaker, you can work at your craft and eventually earn a good living at it. With comedy, that can happen, but the odds are more against you. And you're competing with people, some of them that were born with that natural funny bone where they can just turn anything into funny immediately. So it's mm-hmm. totally that. It's a tough road. I'll say that.
Oh yeah. No, definitely. And you know, and there's been a couple times I'm like, man, I really want to do it, but I don't know. And so I've gone with people and I haven't really signed up, just kind of watch, you know, and I watch the speakers come up. I'm like, oh, he's pretty good. And then I get some boos. I'm like, oh shit. You know, like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. You know, that's kind of, I usually don't let fear hold me back, you know, but it's like, I've never done this before. But then again, it's how I was when I was doing my first, you know, acting. You know, I was on stage and the director was like, seriously, you got to, it was just yelling at people. And I'm like, this is, it's so tense. Like, this is nuts. And it turned out really great. And then I learned more and then I learned from that. And then I did more and I didn't. And so I've been in a, you know, quite a few different live theater, local theater, you know, plays and stuff, you know, and it's just something I enjoy doing. You know, it sucks. You got to memorize all the lines and whatnot, but here's the one big takeaway. Like, this is massive for me. Oh my gosh, this is huge. So I had, when I did Brick, I literally stepped off stage one time. Other than that, I was on the stage. We did an intermission. Everybody was off. But other than the intermission, and I was off stage, but I still had lines to say because I was actually changing clothes. During my speeches, I get really frustrated because I couldn't remember what I wanted to say. It seemed like every single speech, I walk off, I'm like, I didn't even say that. I knew I needed to say that's the one thing I wanted them to know. Didn't end up saying it. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to memorize that. And so during the play, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, everybody in the play is seasoned. I'm like the only new guy. And we missed like two or three paragraphs of an entire dialogue that we were supposed to say, and nobody noticed. Like literally, we did not even notice. We were going, and then it was that brief second like, oh, and I just knew that we had to say this next thing because of what that actor said. And then I said my thing, and then that person knew after I said that one, let's say the last two words. Then that person had to say what they were going to say. And after the play was over, all of us looked at each other was like, did we miss like a page? Like, did we miss? And what the lesson was is that the audience has no idea what you're going to say. They don't know as a speaker that you missed the line or that you didn't say something that you knew that you were supposed to say or whatever. So what I learned from that was you don't have to memorize your talk. Just know the three or four things that you know you have to get out. And then just as you rehearse, you'll know what needs to be said, what's fluff, what's not important, what's important. And so that kind of calmed my nerves a little bit. And I really don't forget anything that I'm going to say on stage anymore when I'm speaking somewhere.
Well, that's such a great point, Sean. And I'll add on to that for those, you know, listening who want to become speakers, who want to become more effective communicators. To that point about memorization, this is something that I brought. I mean, there's so many things I brought from the stand-up world into the speaking world. Like I use a spider method to allow people to mind map their talks and craft talks from scratch. I mean, I really brought over quite a few things, but here's one thing that really served me well in comedy. And then it was the, you know, we talked about transformational moment. It was that transformational moment in my speaking career. I could literally see the difference overnight. Like I'm talking like in 24 hours from when I changed this, but here is what I'm driving at. Basically what we would do in stand up is I had this, this is the best way to explain it. I had this joke about this girl that I went on a blind date with who told me halfway through the date, she leaned over to me playing a game of pool and said, I got to tell you something. I just got to share this with somebody. She said, how would you feel if I told you that not too long ago I had scurvy? And so that, you know, was the weirdest sentence almost that had ever been uttered to me in my life up until that point, because, you know, scurvy to me was a pirate's disease, right? I figured it ended in the 1800s. And so, you know, and there's a whole story about that. So it turned into a joke that I wrote about scurvy girl. And so this, and she actually, after I shared her that I was sharing the joke with her on stage, she's like, oh, I'll tell you more about it. Like she loved being the scurvy girl. But the point is, here's the point of the message, is I would have a joke about scurvy girl or a joke about walking the dog, and the dog walking joke would be called in my head. I would name it. Its title was Dog's World. The scurvy girl's title was Scurvy Girl. And so these were the titles for those jokes. And so all I had to remember, and this goes to your point about memorization, all I had to remember if I had a, say, a 10-minute set and each joke was 2 minutes, let's just say that, I'm just using that for easy keeping track of, then basically all I had to remember was five titles and knowing that each of them are 2 minutes. And all I had to remember was Scurvy Girl, and then I knew the whole joke because it was my story. I fleshed out the story. I practiced it. But from that point on, I didn't have to memorize every part of the whole set. I just had to remember those headers. And so here's how this worked its way into my speaking. And this one thing could be a game changer for the right person right now. But I used to be the bullet point speaker, you know, using PowerPoint, the guy that would have all the bullet points.
Oh, yeah.
Turn and look behind me.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody said to me one day, and this is the moment I decided to change. Somebody said to me one day, and it was, you know what, they said it, and I don't know to this point, at this point, if they meant it in a negative way or if they were just literally, you know, that type of person that was just saying the truth. But they said, you know, dude, this was on an evaluation form, by the way. They didn't say it to me, but I read this and it stuck with me. And they said, you know, you could have just emailed that to us. Everything was on the slides. You didn't have to show up. And that was such a big moment because I'm like, the dude is right. I mean, I'm just the supplement to the PowerPoint rather than the PowerPoint being the supplement to me. And so what I said was, how is this going to change? And then I went on this little journey to figure out who the speakers were that I could emulate and try to figure out what they were doing so that they didn't look like that. And the one I came to was Steve Jobs, because his name kept coming up over and over. So I went to YouTube, to your point about YouTube University, watching Steve Jobs talk, and noticed one thing. He had slides, but his slides would be like, he'd have like 8 slides in an hour, and his slides would be a picture of the iPhone, a picture of a dog, if he was telling a story about a dog. Like, all it was yep. pictures. And so then I jumped immediately in my head back to those stand-up days. Now, all of a sudden, Scurvy Girl would be maybe a picture of a pirate, you know, so that I would remind me that the pirate is about scurvy. And so now, even to this day, because a lot of clients still say you need to use a PowerPoint, so now my PowerPoint is just pictures. Now, the good news is, it's better for the audience because they have a visual to remember the story I'm sharing. Secondly, it's only my supplement. It's not my crutch. And then maybe third, and this is the wild part that came out of it that I didn't plan, is when people say, can you send us your slides so we can share them with everybody? And let's say they want to share them through the whole company, which could mean they don't hire me again and all that. I'm like, sure, here you go. Because my slides, there's a combination on it. You need me there to reveal the combination, because nobody knows what a picture of a pirate on a slide means if you weren't there to see it. So that was the side benefit. But my point to all this was what I learned in stand-up was about the power of just remembering one thing, an image, a title, or what have you, to allow you to share the story. And then all of a sudden, you could have 5 slides with pictures on them, and that's your whole presentation, rather than having 65 lines of bullet points that people have to write down.
Yeah, which was great for TEDx, because they told us, they're like, no heavy text. Like, they were very, very strict. And so what I had was pictures with a title on it. It would say, like, one of mine was the polar bear, and it says, white bear phenomena. So I knew I needed to talk about that research study. London cab driver research 2002. I knew that I needed to talk about that. Like, that slide only talked about this one thing with this one piece of the brain and whatever else. And so whatever that slide was, I knew what I needed to talk about. And I think I only had like 5, maybe 6 slides, including a title slide. And same way, man, I used to be like, I have to have all my information on the slide, you know? And one thing I do now is I create 2 slide decks. I create my slide deck where I'm showing this slide if I have to, because it's like, do you use slides? I'm like, I don't use slides. And if I have to use slides, then fine, I'll use them. But I really don't want to. So all of my speeches for the past year and a half have been done 0 slides, except for a handful. And I, you know, did the pictures and, you know, different things or whatever, so that it enhanced what I was doing. However, if they told me, it's like, yeah, you got to use slides, whatever, I've built my email list by building the slide deck and then having a link that says, hey, if you want the slides to this presentation, go to this link. They type in their email, they type in the name, boop, and then the slides are sent to them. And so I've actually built my email list by just emailing the slides out to people. Well, not me, but the software does. Or you can text slides to 55888, you know, like, and so they get their slides, and so it's all email to them. I build my email list. They get all the information that I'll be talking about, but it's just not on the screen.
Oh, I love that. I truly, truly love that, because that's the thing. I mean, you know, let somebody not be mistaken by what I said. It's not that I want to hold it hostage. I want to, we went back earlier that my goal is to impact as many people as I can. But at the same time, you know, if it comes to the organizer themselves that's just wanting to use it, the material, I've even found like had people that are, you know, literally using my material after sending in the slides.
Yeah.
But the great part now is that they can't basically do that without me there. At the same time, though, I like the idea of giving the attendees access to the slides and with, you know, with enough content that they can make heads or tails of it, especially the ones that were there already, because I want to help people grow and learn. It, you know, I'm not that person that if somebody films me, you know, and then they put it on YouTube that I'm reaching out to them saying, take that off. You didn't get my permission, because I've recognized long ago that there's so many of us distributing amazing content in the world now that, you know, it's not like somebody by you them revealing your one thing that they're getting the access to NASA, you know, like they're not getting access to greatest, you know, the thing that's going to solve problems. But at the same time, you know, I think if you can have it so that, you know, like I said, that it's not a crutch for me, and yet people are still getting impact, then I'm all for that. So, you know, I'm all for any way anybody wants to distribute me, send my stuff out. If they want to, you know, share my quote, if they add my name in, that's, you know, that's obviously golden. But I'm all for that. So, you know, if you're listening right now and you see me post something somewhere, I feel free. If you see me post a video and you want to say, I'm going to put a response to this guy's video. I don't care. You know, if you want to, I write an article, you want to say, I'm just going to reshare his article and say shared, you know, you can say share without if you want. I'm not going to go after you because I realize that's impacting more lives. So, you know, to that point, I just want to touch on that, Sean, is that, you know, when we're saying these things, it's not like I'm trying to hold people hostage for my stuff.
Right.
But I do, you know, I do believe as well that it's more valuable to have me come in. So that's one of the great things that happened at this live. But I still want to add in what you're doing is brilliant, because building your newsletter list while giving access to something that, you know, people, something that can change their life, but also prepares them for your talk or gives them a reinforcement for the talk you already delivered. That's just, that's brilliant. Golden. So I love that.
Yeah. Thanks, man. So let's talk about how people can work with you. I know a lot of speakers that really want to get on TEDx, and I've helped six out of the seven speakers that I've worked with, and I just love TEDx. You've done what, four talks, right? Four TEDx talks?
Done three, and I had to turn down one because of conflict. So I was
that's
invited.
Right,
to
that's right.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so
that's right.
So yeah, I delivered three. And like yourself, I mean, I'm very passionate about, you know, about the TEDx world and what it's done for my career. Like we were talking earlier about, you know, like one thing happens, for example, I get tricked on a stand-up stage and then that leads to where I am today. Well, I can do the same with TEDx talks, and probably like yourself with your TEDx talk, I can actually trace opportunities that came my way solely because of being on that TEDx stage, i.e. my book deal that I have right now. You know, in part, it was a result of being on that TEDx stage. The bookings, I mean, I can go back and literally tell you which bookings the person discovered me from my TEDx talk. So there's such a power in that name right now, the TEDx name. But also, you know, let's not ignore the obvious. It's that you can impact people in a way that's hard to do elsewhere and otherwise, in terms of them seeing that TEDx talk of yours and the value and weight they put on TEDx, so they listen closer, they see it in a different way, and so you get to get your message out to a really big audience. So that's, I mean, this is the why. This is why I'm so passionate about it. I've seen it actually transform people's lives, just that one stage. I will add two, and you know, I'll go back, circle back and answer that question about how people work with me, but another thing that people miss the boat on is how to leverage their TEDx talk. And so, thing that people miss is that going back to that point of the positioning of it, whenever, and you might see this as well, but whenever I'm invited to speak on a stage and I have the MC saying, you know, Corey's this, Corey's that in my bio, when they're introducing me, when they say multiple times TEDx speaker, I can literally watch the eyes in the audience turn toward me. If people recognize what TEDx is, immediately that's the credibility establishment above, by the way, best-selling author, above any of the other actors, that's the one they look over at. So when I started seeing all those things and realizing that that's the weight people put into this, when you can have it on your bio and your email signature, all those kind of things, I recognized that I wanted to help people experience that. You know, the power of what the talk can do for you, the power of after the talk, how you can leverage it, what you can do about it if your talk doesn't blow up and become a really heavily viewed talk, you know, your TEDx talk. It's still, as you know, that doesn't diminish it. I mean, there's still so many ways you can leverage that. So that's the why, because I'm so passionate about what TEDx can do. In terms of how I work with people, essentially what I do is, and we have two programs. You mentioned in the website earlier, the speaking program. That was the original one. The short version of that one is essentially I help people launch their speaking career. After 17 years of paid speaking gigs on a weekly basis for most of those years, people kept coming to me saying, how did you do this? And so I started teaching people that. It was kind of like my whole speaking career, 17 years in a box, and here you go, and you can learn it in months. So that was the first program, and then after that happened, and I ran that for a while, people started coming to me saying, how did you get three TEDx talks in such a short amount of time? And I had recognized, Sean, that I had used the system. Like, it wasn't like coincidence, and it wasn't an accident.
Right.
I know anything I go into, I always measure it and journal it and say, you know, how did I do this? How did this work? Why didn't this work? And so I kept track of the system that I figured out to actually land those talks. And so essentially people started coming to me and saying, how? And so I finally decided to start guiding people through the process. And so what I take people through is the first part is how to secure the talk, because if you don't secure it, nothing else matters in relation to a TEDx talk.
Right.
The second part, if you know, is delivering the talk. I mean, yeah, a TEDx talk, if you watch it, it looks different than other talks. But what I say to people, you know what, learn how to deliver a TEDx style talk, because I think you'll agree with this, Sean. You can take what you do on a TEDx stage into any talk that you do. The things that work on a TEDx stage, why not have your 45-minute keynote have some of those same elements? And so yep. My whole thing is I'm not teaching you how to do one talk. I'm teaching you how to do a TEDx style talk so that way you can bring it into all your future talks. So that's the mm-hmm. delivery side. And then there's the leverage is what I just mentioned, where to put it, how to add it into your as seen on banners, why you should have an as seen on banner. So the leveraging that talk. And so that's what I do. I guide people through the entire process from start to finish. And then within the program, I always wanted to run a program that was like the unprogrammed program. And I know you and I chatted about this recently, but I wanted yep. to add in more components than just landing the talk. So what I did was I added in things that I'm already doing that I can bring people along with me. So for instance, bringing them on to our two shows that you mentioned earlier. So I'll bring them on for a feature spot on our show. And then that way I can give them a polished clip of their interview that they can use in their media forever. And we put our students in my best-selling book as well, the Book of Public Speaking, which you had mentioned I'm offering to people here for free. And so essentially what I decided to do is said, why don't I make it a full program with a whole bunch of bonuses rather than just one or the other? And so that's really what it looks like working with me is I take them through the weekly training, through the program itself. Then we do things like TEDx challenges. We have a closed Facebook group where we do live Q&As, online Q&As. We do a live event a couple of times a year that people get tickets to. So it's really just like a full way to work with me, both in a learn-on-demand capacity and a live way. And I was able to structure it so that I could work with many rather than one, but also people still get support as if they're working with me one-on-one. So that's it in what I've been a three-minute nutshell.
I love it. I think TEDx is absolutely amazing. Some of the best speakers in the world. If you go back to Simon Sinek's talk back in 2009, hardly anybody knew who Simon Sinek was back then. And really, if you ask people now, they're like, "Oh, that's like the leadership guy, or that's the why guy," or they still, even if they don't know who that guy is, they just basically know him from his TEDx talk. That was back in 2009. You know, I mean, it's been viewed millions and millions and millions of times. And it's always referenced, what is your why, and, you know, all the books that he's written. So some of the best and amazing speakers have spoken on TEDx, and it's such a prestigious stage. It has helped me, but it's also hurt me in the sense that I applied for a couple of TEDx talks, and they said, listen, you have one of the best applications that we've seen so far. We just cannot have you on the stage because you've already delivered one. I was like, that absolutely makes no sense. They're like, well, we really want to have people get discovered, which is kind of the theme, like discovery. And part absolutely. Of that is anybody who's had a TEDx talk isn't going to speak there. I'm like, come on. So, I mean, yeah, if I didn't have a talk already, they would have given me one. Cool, great. But I've been told that, you know, hey, you've already got a TEDx talk, you know, we'll let somebody else have it. Yeah, all right. Well, fair enough. But well, it doesn't stop me from applying.
And you know what, Sean, you didn't hear this from me, but or everybody listening live, you didn't hear this from me either. But even though we have it documented after I say it here in a second, but whenever, whenever I'm in the process, when I was going in the process of being considered for my TEDx talks, I'll just say it this way. I didn't announce that I'd already done another one. So I didn't hide it. They didn't ask. So that was in part of my pitch, if you will. So that was very intentional. And you're right. That's the weird thing is I knew it would actually lower my odds rather than increase them, which is counterintuitive. You think if I already delivered it, you know I'm going to deliver. But it is what it is. One thing I'll add, which I think is important to what you mentioned, is Simon Sinek. That talk that you're talking about, going back to my point about how a TEDx talk can land you a book deal, his book Start With Why, which is obviously major bestseller, was actually released after his TEDx talk. So the book was actually done about the TEDx talk. It was 2011. The book was released. So think about the book that TEDx talk spawned. And that gives you an idea of the power of TED. But to your point, I mean, that was an early on one. I'll tell you another person we brought onto the show, and I've become a friend of him over the years, is a guy named Richard St. John. And I think Richard now is in his 70s. But he was on the main TED stage, did a 3-minute roughly talk called 8 to Be Great about a book that he had written. Actually, I don't think he had written the book either at the time, But his TED Talk, maybe because it was early on, it went viral. It ended up being viewed, if you look at all the places that talk's been shared on YouTube and TED, it ended up being viewed close to 15 million times. He did a second talk a couple years later, viewed like 8 million times. And by the way, to put that in perspective, I think Simon Sinek's talk has been viewed like 30. So Richard's like almost halfway there as a guy that nobody even really, you know, nobody knows like Richard's name just on a household name basis. But when I asked Richard about the power of TED Talk, he said, Corey, he said, I haven't prospected for a speaking gig since. Not once. Like he hasn't
reached out.
He said, what's that story, Sean?
I said, I have to.
And you know, what he said was, for him, he said, this is the big thing. I mean, yeah, it's one thing to say I haven't looked for a gig, but I mean, who's to say how many he wants a year? And is he with a bureau? But he said that was without bureaus. So that's on his own, just from them coming from watching his talk. But that was the power of his TED Talk. Again, it was early on. But it just gives you an idea of how many opportunities can be brought out of them. I mean, Simon Sinek, a pretty big selling book came out of his. And Richard, who you can Google his talk or YouTube his talk and watch it, that talk basically changed the game and built his entire speaking career from scratch. So that's the power of TED.
Yeah. Well, when I am looking for or like I'll get an email, it'll be I get this all the time. Hey, saw your TEDx talk. We'd love to have you booked. I'm like, heck yeah, I get those emails. I also get the ones that, hey, I saw you at this event, or I heard of you from an event. My friend came, like, I love the referrals. But when I do reach out, I'm like, hey, I saw that you're looking for a speaker. I've spoken at TEDx. I've spoken at this. I'm like, yep, you're hired. Like, I think it's amazing the power and the weight that stage actually carries. And so, absolutely, absolutely correct. We're at about 3 minutes left of the show. What I want to do right now is I want to give you a moment to shamelessly plug whatever it is that you want. You can plug Friends Quotes websites, Facebook, your programs, products, services, whatever it is that you want the audience to know and to do, shamelessly plug, go.
Wow. Well, thanks so much, Sean. And I'm going to go at two levels here. The quick one is I'm going to go on the level of, I mentioned earlier, a free book. I just mentioned it in passing. And you mentioned it, you mentioned the link and mentioned it was related to a free book. So for people that have been listening to this, and we've talked a lot about speaking, if you are wanting to get into speaking, if you're wanting to go to the next level, whatever that looks like for you, feel free to grab that book. I mean, that's a good starting point to get to know me. The book itself is available at the Book of Public Speaking .com. So it's pretty easy to remember, the Book of Public Speaking.com. And the book itself, maybe not surprisingly, is called The Book of Public Speaking. So that's why it's easy to remember. In that book, by the way, we do interviews with Tom Ziegler, talking about and reflecting on his father, Zig Ziegler, one of the greatest speakers of all time, talking about what Zig did really well. And so you'll get insights not just from me, but from people that we interviewed, because we actually have 7 interviews, I think it is, with top leaders in the speaking world. So that's the freebie. That's one angle, if you will. The other side of things, we've been talking a little bit about my TEDx program, and I mentioned the sister program, the speaking program. So that's, you know, the other side of things. If you feel like you're at that stage, if you feel like, you know what, I want to be on a TEDx stage, I want to learn how to do it, I want somebody to guide me, I don't want to have to figure it all out myself. Or likewise, if you're wanting to figure out how to get paid speaking gigs or even just start a speaking business, those are the things I really am passionate about helping people with. And so I would say the best, there's 2 options there. One, you can go to those websites that are in the link. So the speakingprogram.com or the TEDxprogram.com. The timing is perfect because, and I'm not making this up, literally yesterday, we just opened the doors. And what we do is we only open the doors twice a year for about 2 weeks because we like to get the program rolling. So yeah, so I will say that if you know, something that is of interest to you, this interview couldn't be at a better time. If you're listening right now live, we're literally just open for registrations and signups. And so you can go to those 2 websites and then reach out to me if you want at conversationswithleaders@gmail.com. So that's it, Sean. That's my pitch.
There you go, man. Hey, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Sean. It's been an absolute honor and a pleasure from my perspective as well. And thanks for all the great work you're doing in the world.
Thank you, man. And likewise to you, you're doing amazing, amazing things in the world, man. And people would be blessed to coach with you. So Life Transformation Radio listeners, an amazing guest impacting the world around him. If you want to become a speaker, if you want to become a TEDx speaker, speaker. Connect with him at the links below, and he will rock your world with the information that this guy has and the results that you will achieve. And with that, I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the core values that you hold deep in your heart. And I call this living your brand. So until next episode, live a great life.